Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 23 for 420. Chance Watson and Josh McDonald coming at you with the news. Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by Bank CDA. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com.
I've actually been watching my Dogecoin today, Josh.
That's not a real word.
No, it's not. It's a meme.
That's not real either.
Memes are not real?
No. No, it's all fake. Everything's fake, Chance.
You know, people accuse us of being fake news.
It's true. Even though we have no impact on anything outside of our own little world.
Yeah, I always laugh about that. Like, whether it be just us here at the Shoshone News or even just, you know, the larger Haganon News Network. I laugh at people. Like, you think that we jump on, like, a lunch break with Wolf Blitzer and chop her off to New York to get some lunch or something?
As thrilling as that would be.
Yes. Yeah. Thrilling as what that would be. We don't communicate with, like, a Big Brother national news network of some kind.
No, we are not a affiliate. No. I mean, I guess we are, but we're not an affiliate of anything national.
No, we're not. We have a...
We're a Haganon News affiliate.
We are. We are a Haganon News affiliate. We have a deal with AP.
Everyone has a deal with AP.
That's true. Everybody has a deal with AP.
Or everyone who wants a deal with AP has a
or
deal.
Associated Press, for those who are unfamiliar.
Yeah.
And they just... If you've ever read an AP story... I don't think you can get more to the facts.
Yeah, NPR.
Maybe. And even NPR tends to lean a little one direction, but...
I don't know about that. They're so boring.
You could be... we try not to do that.
Try not to be boring?
And I'm August Clementine.
Yeah.
What was the other guy's name?
Barry Merbles. Yeah. And then August Clementine's the new guy.
Yes. And this is Thought for Your Thoughts. Parks and Rec's reference makes it into the show.
Right. This weekly.
Yes. We were joking about what we should talk about in these early minutes of the show. Since it's 420, I figured we should talk about, what did you call them?
Stoner flicks.
Stoner flicks.
Yeah,
not necessarily, you know, I mean, for those who are listening to this in a state where it's legal, good for you, but, here in Idaho, that's still not a thing. And, didn't that get shot down recently? They tried to make it like a constitutional thing that it can't be legal here. And
at this point, I
don't follow that closely. Yeah, enough.
When it comes up on things,
I don't either, but, regardless if you are a fan of that or not, I'm sure at some point you have watched a movie with pot usage or TV show with pot usage in it. The first thing I wanted to open up the floor on, did you ever watch that show Weeds?
Everyone watched Weeds, I think.
It's accurate. Yeah. I think so. I tried to.
Why does it make it sound like you didn't finish it?
I got to the part where like they burned down half the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I just kind of, you know, when you stop like sympathizing with the main character.
Oh, I don't think you could ever stop sympathizing with Mary Louise Parker.
I can.
No.
And I did.
No.
I didn't necessarily care that she was dealing pot to soccer moms, but when she lit most of her neighborhood on fire.
Yeah, that show was pure gold.
Yeah, that's debatable. I thought it was okay. I thought it was pretty good. Other TV show with pot as a central theme, That 70s Show.
Initially, yeah, I think as it waxed on, it moved away from that because it didn't need that.
Every episode had a circle.
Yeah, but the circle was a minimal.
Right, the show wasn't like it wasn't about pot. It was
the first season. The circle was very much. I would almost venture to say a third of the show was the circle. They'd do something and they'd revert back to the circle.
They got a little less. No, I would say there was at least somebody would need to look this up, but. I would say that there's at least one circle in episode.
Yeah, but it was far more prevalent.
And there were weed-based episodes.
Yeah, and then it did get a little bit more, it was never weed-based. It was the stash.
The stash, yes. They were always very...
They were very conservative about...
Correct.
...how they admitted to their marijuana usage.
Yes, yes. Even though you had... always get them confused. Was it Tommy Chong?
Yep.
Okay, not the other one. Even though Tommy Chong was on the show and basically... Basically a co-star by the end in that horrible last season.
Yeah, by the last like 3-4 seasons, he was in the credits.
I was gonna say there was a season or two gap where he wasn't on the show for a little bit. Remember he left town?
No, where he was in jail in real life.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had to serve a jail sentence, I believe, for drug paraphernalia.
Oh, God. Well, that's funny. That makes sense. Then he must have joked that he went to jail or something.
Well, because he had a business called Tommy Chong Bongs.
Gotcha. God, that show did so well for all of those actors and actresses.
Except for Eric and
we talked about Topher Grayson before. While his movies aren't quality, he does keep getting roles for some reason. He's now in a TV like a show. Yeah, he's like in a TV show with.
But that's about all he's done.
With that Facebook celebrity.
Oh, I don't know.
Can't remember. But yeah, he hasn't really been in too many things. Pretty much the only, and not because of the show. If anybody's had failure, it's not because of the show.
Right.
We'll put it that way. Like everybody could have, you know, Danny Masterson went down because of his own stuff. The girl who played Lori, RIP.
Hold on.
What?
I just read the most amazing thing.
Go ahead.
During Chong's prison sentence in 2003, he was a cellmate with Jordan Belfort.
Who's that?
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Really?
And it was Chong who encouraged Belfort to write the memoir that would later go on to become...
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll shift the conversation over to you. I know that you're going to want to talk about Pineapple Express for a second.
Oh, stoner flicks are... Everyone has their memory of a stoner flick that they love or
sure. Oh, they go back.
Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke obviously tends to be like
the
standard bearer.
Was it Dazed and Confused?
Move into Dazed and Confused with Matthew McConaughey. Mm-hmm.
You could even technically count Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted. They Bill weren't Ted. So much.
It's not, but it's heavily. It's like Scooby Doo. Like, it's where it's heavily implied.
I don't know that they were ever implied that they were stoners, that they were just idiots.
Okay.
They were going...
See, I'd argue that Dumb and Dumber does that better, though. Like, you don't think Dumb and Dumber are stoners. Like, they're dumb.
Right. They were just, like, your stereotypical California surfer dudes.
Ah.
But fair then, enough. You know, a stoner flick can also take on, like, We're the Millers is a movie about...
Yeah.
Them, you know.
Yep. I was going to say, like, drugs. This is a very loose category. Like, it doesn't have to necessarily, like, pot doesn't have to be the plot driver of the show. It can just be, you know, like I said, with that 70s show, there's only, like, a few episodes that, like, directly are about the stash.
Any of the movies that feature Jay and Silent Bob?
Yes. Absolutely.
I think every single one of us know... The little jingle, $15, little man.
Yes.
I don't think anyone who just heard that will probably sing the rest of it.
Right.
You know, we had a movie here locally about a weed smuggler.
Yes.
Kid Cannabis.
Yes, Kid Cannabis.
Which is an interesting, based on a true story. I actually worked with some people who ran in that circle.
Really?
Yeah, back in the day.
Interesting.
But... That does bring me to the be-all, end-all stoner classic, Pineapple Express.
Mm-hmm.
It is, not only is it the best stoner film ever, but it is also, it's a top five movie for me. It's clever. It's got a legitimate plot.
Mm-hmm.
It's got good acting, a little bit of action, a little bit of comedy.
It is one of James Franco's top, you could argue... His best comedy one, you and I already talked about that, his best comedy movie, and then probably in his top three of all-time performances.
Yeah.
Top five, if you want to argue, you know, throw in a couple others that are more serious.
And as much as I enjoy Seth Rogen in that movie, he pretty much plays the same character in every movie.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't have a lot of range, does he?
Yeah, but he is very selective with the roles he takes.
It's like Bruce Willis, kind of.
He can be that guy in all these other movies, and it's perfectly okay.
Yeah, because if he's not forcing it, like, that's the role.
Right, that's him.
Yeah.
But yeah, Pineapple Express is probably in my top five movies of all time. I could watch it over and over and over and over and never grow tired of it. That's how I rank them.
Sure.
But yeah.
Okay. And the latest thing that I just off the, I of course, Letterkenny with Joint Boy.
Oh, the Skids.
The Skids. They're not. Don't think you came here. Don't tell me you came here for pot.
Weed is the least of their concerns.
Yeah, they really don't care about that at all. That's pretty low on the totem pole for them in that show.
Oh,
a lot of good references in this, in our pop culture opening.
Yes.
Our cold open, so to speak.
Our pop culture cold open.
Yes. Okay.
And live from Osborne. It's North Idaho now. That was a Saturday Night Live reference right there.
I got that. I understand. Okay. Jumping into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls headlines, starting with Saturday, April 17th, accused killer, driver shot self.
So that's like the accused killer said the driver shot herself.
That's accused killer. Driver shot.
For those herself. Of you who can't hear that, yeah.
Yes, yes. There's a colon in there.
There's a colon in there.
Yeah. It's written by Kay Thornbrew. The Bonner's Ferry man accused of shooting his girlfriend in the head while she was driving, killing her, remains in jail on $1 million bond. Victor A. Klaus, 55, is charged with first-degree murder. If convicted, Klaus could face the death penalty. The Coonie County Sheriff's Office responded last Tuesday to a report of a multi-vehicle crash on U.S. 95 near Athol. Melissa L. Scholl, 45, was reportedly traveling northbound in a Toyota Tundra when she crossed the center line and sideswiped a motorcycle and another vehicle. Police say Klaus was a passenger in Scholl's vehicle. Scholl was pronounced dead at the scene. Police said she had a gunshot wound to the head. Klaus reportedly told witnesses at the scene that Scholl shot herself. Witnesses said that they heard Klaus repeatedly say to Scholl, "Wake up, there's a B, letter B there."
Female dog word.
There you go. Scholl and Klaus had been dating for less than a month after meeting online, police said. Klaus was reportedly in the process of divorcing another woman. He told police he and Scholl were arguing about his divorce when she grabbed his handgun off the dashboard where he said he always kept it and shot herself. An autopsy reportedly indicated that the barrel of the gun was at least 18 inches away from Scholl's head when it fired. Police said multiple tests performed using similar handguns showed that it was, quote, nearly physically impossible to replicate the same injury by self-infliction. I was going to say, that's really not hard to figure out if she was shot in the side of the head versus under.
See, no, I do have like the criminologist in me.
Sure. Well, there's also powder burns. There's if it's too close to the barrel, then it will leave scorch marks on the side of the head, on the side of the skin. Like, there's a lot of that.
But for him to be 18 inches away, too, he would have had to hold the gun and turn and kind of hold it awkwardly close.
But that's more believable than her sticking her arm out all the way.
If it was on the dashboard and she grabs it and her thumb is on the trigger, it becomes a lot more conceivable for her to press the trigger with her thumb. Just hear me out.
You're playing devil's advocate, and I appreciate it.
If you're driving and you grab it, unless it's turned out to where you grab it.
Okay.
But if it's where he normally grabs
it. To be able to aim with your thumb while driving and hit yourself in the head and get the job done, boy, it's.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's likely, but it's definitely not impossible.
Sure. But based on what the police are saying, it sounds like that's probably not what happened.
I mean. Yeah, I guess, was there a gunshot residue? I mean, I guess if you fire a truck or a gun in the truck, cab of a truck, there's going to be gunshot residue everywhere, right?
On the direction the barrel was pointing and on the hands of the individual. And that should be able to solve it if there's powder burns.
Unless he tried to stop her. Hey, the fact that he was trying to wake her up by saying, you know, wake up, B word. That doesn't
bode well.
Lead me to believe that he was terribly thrilled.
Yeah. Okay. What else we got?
A little
Uncle Brad.
So, yeah. Little blast legislature in veto of emergency bills. This is by Craig Northrup. Governor Brad Little announced Friday afternoon he will veto two bills that would limit a governor's ability to guide Idaho through emergencies. The two bills, House Bill 135AA and SB Senate Bill 1136AA, curtail how and for how long a sitting governor can declare emergencies. Quote, this is just plain irresponsible, Little said. Quote, let's be honest, these bills are an emotional knee-jerk reaction because of anger about the pandemic and some of my decisions during a very uncertain time last year. House Bill 135 limits, among other things, the duration for which an emergency or disaster can be declared. The House bill says an emergency can last no longer than 60 days, except for the purposes of collecting federal funds to combat the disaster in question. The bill would also empower the legislature, if already convened in a regular session or called up in a special session, to override a governor's emergency powers. Senate Bill 1136, meanwhile, amends Idaho code that enables a governor's specific powers. For example, the new language shrinks the definition of an extreme peril to exclude air pollution, fires, floods, storms, earthquakes, and most notably, epidemics. Like House Bill 135 and Senate Bill, I'm sorry, like House Bill 135, Senate Bill 1136 also establishes all Idaho workers as essential and considerably narrows a governor's ability to close or restrict businesses. Senator Steve Vick, a Republican out of Dalton Gardens, co-sponsored Senate Bill 1136. He said Little's announcement Friday was unsurprising. Quote, clearly we have a difference of opinion on what the legislature's role in governing is, Vick told the press. Quote, I don't believe he should be able to have indefinite power, the power to change laws and restrict people's lives and livelihoods.
I mean, this was going to happen.
Governor Little's quote is so spot on. Mm-hmm. It's a knee-jerk reaction.
It is.
I'm sorry. Not everyone was essential.
My personal opinion on it, I think Governor Little did one of the best jobs in terms of how to handle the pandemic.
Both the current and the former president have complimented him on his handling of the pandemic.
Idaho's format, like the stages and everything, like they were the ones who basically created that, and then other states obviously adopted it to their state, but you know, their own versions of it, but they took the framework of that and used it as their own. I think he did. I mean, Idaho's one of a few states in the country that came out making money
right
from the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't, there are very few people that can say that. Idaho had one of the lower, you know, death rates. I agree 100% agree. I think he hit the nail right on the head with that one.
Yep.
All right. Moving to the Sunday, April 18th edition, Tame Growth with Fire Protection. This by Craig Northrup. A $14.9 million bond is on the May 18th ballot, which would go toward relocating two existing Kootenai County fire and rescue stations and building a fifth in an effort to keep up with the region's growth. Quote, we get that growth is an ugly word right now, Kootenai County Fire and Rescue Chief Chris Way said. We understand that the question we get about growth is the most is, well, as fire chief, can't you just stop growth? I'd love to have that kind of power, but that's just not realistic. The only thing we can do about growth is to make sure new homes meet fire code. Way said the influx of new residents is stretching Kootenai County Fire and Rescue thin. Quote, when you look at Station 4 by the Croc Center, the station was first built in 1974 and opened in 75. Back in 75, there was nothing north of I-90. Today, it takes us 10 minutes to get to Dalton Gardens. The bond would enable Station 4 to move to Kathleen and 4th near the Kootenai County Fairgrounds. Way said the new facility would give Station 4 better coverage over its reach, which stretches to Dalton Gardens, Fernand, and east of Coeur d'Alene. The bond would also dedicate funds to relocate Station 3, which sits at 16th and Highway 41, to the west side of the highway on Prairie Avenue. If voters approved, the $14.9 million bond would expire after 10 years at an estimated 1.23% annual interest rate, making the final payoff at close to $15.9 million by the end of 2031. Based on current economic conditions, the cost increase to property owners would be $24 per $100,000 of assessed value.
Hmm.
Not necessarily an expert on the situation, but if everything, all that's accurate.
$24 doesn't seem like too much.
Not too bad. And if it takes...
Although right now...
I've seen that little firehouse across on the Croc. It looks kind of...
The people of Coeur d'Alene right now.
If they're having to go to Fernand, yeah. If that firehouse has to get to Fernand, that is a bad location for it. 100%.
However, when you're, you know, one bedroom, one bathroom, house mm-hmm. is suddenly worth $600,000, and you don't want to pay an extra $132,000.
There is also that, yes. Yeah,
that might change some people's yep. opinions. A Hunger to Help. This is by Bill Bewley, also in the Sunday edition there. Linda Ciccarelli isn't surprised in the least that her daughter is driven to give away food to anyone who needs it. Quote, it's in her blood, she says. Quote, it kind of runs in the family, giving food away to the needy. Her daughter is Brandy Badger, president and founder of International Nutritional Sustainable Partners. Last month, it provided food to an estimated 38,000 people. Since the coronavirus hit last year, Badger estimates INSP has given away 37 million pounds of food. For 2 hours Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Badger and a horde of volunteers distributed about 1,250 USDA Farmers to Families food boxes, 40,000 pounds worth, for free. Badger, a 1995 Coeur d'Alene High School graduate, said the goal was to make sure that the community locks arms together to make sure everyone has food on the table. She said that she found that early on in the coronavirus lockdown, people, especially the elderly, were afraid to leave their homes and nobody was checking on them. So she did and shared boxes of food with them. She believes it has led to neighbors helping neighbors and residents looking after one another. Quote, we've heard that we've saved lives. We've heard that elderly were eating canned cat food before someone brought them a box, she said. Thanks. Quote, so it really is helping them, not just on the nutritional side, but on the mental side as well. Quote, it really just empowers me to keep driving, keep moving, and keep doing more, she said, because we know it's just locking our communities back together, letting everyone know we are community strong.
Boy, those people, good people, good folks.
Cat food, huh?
That's not good.
That's rough. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the United States, responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted, value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit hecla-mining.com.
Moving on to Monday, April 19th.
Monday.
Post Falls Chamber shows appreciation for education system. This is by Madison Hardy. As school district staff nears the spring semester finish line, the Post Falls Chamber of Commerce and Business community showed their support in the form of 23 filled to the brim gift baskets. At the turn of the year, Chamber President and CEO Christina Pettit said that the organization's business and education committee began discussing the Post Falls School District's tireless efforts. 19 different Post Falls schools received 23 baskets, Pettit said. The chamber wanted to ensure that everyone from the custodial staff, food service, maintenance, transportation, nurses, and teachers could share the goods. Friday marked the end of the first week of complete in-person schooling in the Post Falls School District since the COVID-19 pandemic began last year. Reorganizing the strain this change puts on school staff, the chamber hoped the baskets arrived just at the right time. Quote, it's been a challenging year. We've had a number of operational challenges, particularly at the beginning of the year, said Dina Nakarado, Post Falls School District Superintendent and former principal of the Post Falls High School. The staff, have been in great in their perseverance, their tenacity, and their amazing work with the kids. For the chamber, the education system is a significant component of the community. Quote, the business community and a strong support of the district's levy coming up on May 18th, Pettit said. We believe a strong education system makes the business community better.
Hmm. Good. Hmm? They're still trying to pass that levy, right? They're going to levy here in
coming
few
up
weeks.
In May.
So this does not surprise me that the chamber would be
helping
trying
them out.
To help kind of prop them up a little bit.
Yep.
Tuesday, April 20th, those are today's headlines. Mm-hmm. CDA school board rescinds mask requirement.
Kind of saw this one coming.
Yeah, this by Devin Weeks. The mask requirement is no more. Coeur d'Alene School Board trustees, again split on the matter, voted 3-2 during a special workshop Monday evening to strongly recommend masks and face coverings for the students in the Coeur d'Alene School District. Trustee Casey Morris Rowe made the motion, which was seconded by Trustee Tambra Pickford. Morris Rowe, Pickford, and Chair Jennifer Brumley voted in favor. Trustee Lisa May and Vice Chair Rebecca Smith voted no. The board voted in the exact same fashion later in the meeting when deciding if masks should still be mandatory for teachers and staff. The mask recommendations go into effect Wednesday. Brumley said that if the district is going to make this move, now is the time. However, she strongly encourages students and teachers to wear masks. As the mother of a senior who could miss prom, finals, and graduation, she says she understands the implications of this decision. Quote, "This is a significant decision for me on a personal level," she said. Quote, "I say that because it's not personal. This is about the whole." Morris Rowe again led the charge when the board was ready to vote on district administration's ability to change the mask policy when necessary. This would be if COVID clusters or outbreaks appear and bring schools' population to a 2 to 4.99% threshold of active cases per the building COVID tracker that can be found on the school's website. This vote was unanimous. This is interesting. So I spoke with a member of the Kellogg School Board. I will leave them unnamed. And they discussed how, as you guys, I think, probably talked about on Friday's podcast, Mullen School District dropping theirs and the city of Kellogg dropping their mask requirements. The one thing the Kellogg School Board, who still has a mask requirement in place, they're saying, do we want to risk things like spring sports, prom, graduation? Gosh, you know, you put it like that, but then I hear, you know, here's a board chair who's voting in favor while she's got a senior who could potentially lose out on those things. I don't know if the mask requirements in place are enough to dissuade me. I can remember if I had lost out on
our local health district says no more.
I would be... I don't know if it's worth the risk. But that being said, it depends on how strictly they're following these rules too. You know, I've been in and around the school and haven't seen much of a...
Sure. It just opens up the mask debate again.
Yeah.
How effective they are, what they do.
I think the one thing we all can be kind of excited about is I think there's a really good chance that we start the 2021-22 school year with no masks in place.
I think so too. All right. Dog's death prompts petition. This is by Bill Bewley. Megan Kane, as she had done before, threw the ball for her dog, Scout, last Tuesday afternoon at Go Fivepenny Park. Only this time, with so many kids around for soccer practice, she threw it in a different direction than usual, and the new ball took a bad bounce towards 7th Street. The one-year-old German short-haired pointer enthusiastically gave chase. As Scout ran, Kane saw an older model pickup northbound on 7th, going what she believed was about 35 miles per hour beyond the street's 25 miles per hour speed limit. The grayish truck hit Scout. The driver didn't slow down, Kane said, and kept going. The impact killed the beloved family pet. Both Kane and Herbert said drivers routinely speed between Harrison and Lakeside on 7th Street. She has also launched a petition, quote, "Coeur d'Alene stop sign assessment for Scout and our children," which had 430 signatures as of Monday afternoon. Quote, "Our town has grown," it reads. As with all changes, it is time to pause and ensure we keep our children safe. As local residents, business owners, and community advocates, we hereby request a formal and published review of the placement of stop signs in accordance with national safety standards to ensure Coeur d'Alene stop sign placements are increased. The area of focus for the study requested is Midtown and Downtown, all streets southwest of Interstate 90. Coeur d'Alene Police Captain Dave Hagar said police have not received a lot of complaints about problems with speeding on 7th Street. He said patrol units are spread out around the city doing their best to reduce accidents and ensure public safety.
I used to live on 15th, right off 15th Street on Harrison and down in those little residential areas, and people fly. There is not a lot of, I think people are so accustomed to 35 everywhere else that they don't take into account the narrower streets, kids, pets, things like that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, this is a horrifying story. But
yeah, I mean, I'm going to have a soft spot for dogs on this one. You know, it's a sad and unfortunate situation. Would stop signs have prevented it? I don't know.
It's harder to get up to speed if you have few more stop
signs.
That's
true. And it's possible that, you know, at a lower speed, the dog might have survived. It's
sure.
Possible. We can only guess.
I mean, considering this person hit the dog and then kept going.
Well, then that's just you're just a special,
like,
horrible
you're just
person.
An ass. Like, yeah. Let's just call it what it is, right. You know.
Because no one would have blamed you. I mean, the dog ran in the middle of the road.
Right, like, right. And if you're doing the speed limit, although this says she believes he was going faster.
Hmm.
But if you weren't breaking any rules and it happened, like, you know, we've all been there.
Yeah.
You know, we've all had encounters.
Animals run in front of your car.
Kids happens. Run in front of car. Yeah. Like, scary stuff happens, but to not stop and all that, that's just, I hope that they take it seriously and they take a look down there. As someone who's lived down there, it can be scary at times.
Agreed.
Hey, if you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The taproom is open 7 days a week. Stop by and try their Big Hop Mess Volume 3. Silly amounts of Mosaic, Citra, and Cashmere in the Idaho 7 hops make this the IPA for IPA enthusiasts. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
I really do like me some Mosaic hops.
You've croned about this before.
They're in some of my most favorite beers.
Ah.
So they definitely do a good job.
Well, I guess I'm glad you know what you like.
Yes, that is accurate. Okay.
What was our headline for Shoshone?
Fires.
Oh.
Wildfires get out of control over weekend. I wrote this one myself. I'll kind of go through it. I don't want to go into detail on every single one of the fires, but over the course of the weekend, April 16th to the 18th, crews with the Idaho Department of Land's Cataldo District and with Shoshone County Fire District Number 2, so the west end of the valley, responded to 4 separate fires, wildfires over the weekend, all human caused, relating to either slash piles or controlled burning, or so-called controlled burning. So not so controlled burning, so to speak. The first blaze, officially known as the Mission 32 fire, started in the mid-afternoon of April 16th in privately owned flatland west of the Cataldo Mission. Fire crews of the IDL and Shoshone County Fire District Number 2 arrived on scene at approximately 7 p.m. and got to work immediately to limit the spread. IDL and District 2 units walked the swampy area near the boat launch to ensure that fire would not progress toward the mission, Myers said. After working throughout the night, crews were able to contain the fire by Saturday morning, limiting the damage to 33 acres of burned grass and fine fuels. No injuries or structure damage was reported. Thankfully, IDL Fire Warden Chris Myers told me that the fire got roughly 400 to 500 yards away from the mission. So, I mean,
I got to.
Does that sound like a lot? No, but if the wind kicks up and goes the right direction,
I got to see
it can cover that ground
firsthand
quick.
On multiple occasions. As in fact, I drove to Coeur d'Alene that day. And kind of saw everything going on and was like, oh, looks like some controlled burn piles on my way out. Mm-hmm. Then when I was coming back, as I'm looking.
Yeah, it looked.
And that was
not so
Friday
controlled.
Night. Yeah. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, well, that looks a little bit less controlled than I thought. So then I was like, but they were still, I knew that they were there earlier and I had seen the crews, the people had been pulling stuff in. So I knew. So I went home and then all of a sudden looking at Facebook and I see that they have now reported it's uncontrolled. So I reached to you and was like,
yeah, it was a controlled burn. It started out as a privately controlled burn. It was the property owners were going out and trying to do a controlled burn.
Right.
From what you learned on scene from Mark Ahmet, it was basically done by amateurs and it kind of got away from them. So, and unfortunately, this pattern would continue the next day when IDL crews had to respond to Riverview Drive in Kingston for another grassland fire. This one only took about a half acre before crews were able to get everything under control. This one started from a slash pile. Myers told talking about the burner. He's an experienced burner that has done it before and had success, but it surprised him. He said he lit one match and that was all it took to get outside of his ability to control it. So, yeah, I mean, it, basically the reoccurring theme here is that things are dry and you shouldn't burn anything right now. We're coming up on permit season here starting on May 10th. So I would definitely we'll get there in a second. The next fire, the Tamarack Ridge Fire on Sunday, officially called the Dudley 6 Fire, burned approximately 3 acres of land before IDL and Shoshone County Fire District Number 2 crews could knock it down. Mother Nature also assisted their efforts by adding a little late night rain. This one was sparked by an old slash pile that had sparked up again. So this was it slash pile that had not been completely put out.
Jeez.
The final fire that folks in Pinehurst might have seen burned on the side of the Pinehurst I-90 eastbound on-ramp and was sparked by another slash pile positioned just north of By the Way Campground. Burning in a similar terrain as the other three fires, flames made their way across roughly an acre of dry, flat grassland aided by the wind. The scary part was that the wind picked up some embers from that fire in the low grassland where it was manageable and got up on the hillside, that nearby hillside that makes Pinehurst have a weird air currents. Mm-hmm. Got up on there and got to watch firefighter Nick Waits have to run down the hill and hit it before it moved up. So, yeah, things, thankfully, nobody hurt, nothing too significantly damaged other than grassland and fuel, you know, easy fuels to burn. But both Amit and Myers are really stressing that, man, there are alternatives to burn. Okay, we got a transfer station, or just sit on it. Wait until fall when things are a little bit better and wet, and we're not having to worry about this. Because right now it's April, and we're already seeing fires. Right. So, just be cautious.
And that wind, we've had those constant winds, which have blown.
That's been very strange for here in the valley. Things
dry.
Yep.
Where you might go, well, it's April, it's still wet out. No, it's really not as wet as you think. When you go out, remember how cold it was and dry it was after that windstorm. You know, it wasn't like it was wet out there. Mm-hmm. It was freezing cold and it was just dry.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Also on the front page, headline, Leadman 2021.
Headman. I like that.
Headman. This is I wrote this one. This out of Kellogg there. The weather was almost too good to be true this weekend, which was just one of the things that made the 2021 Dave Smith Motors Leadman Triathlon a huge success, according to event organizers. 254 athletes converged on Kellogg from at least 6 different states to test their luck at the annual Ski Bike Run event that runs from the top of Silver Mountain's Kellogg Peak all the way down to the Gondola Village. Silver Mountain Marketing Coordinator and the event organizer, Gus Colburn, detailed out how much work went into bringing the event back after losing it to the pandemic last year. Quote, athletes near and far were thrilled to have the chance to compete this year. It was a competitive race with a lot of newcomers who became Leadman finishers for the first time, Colburn said. We capped the number of entrants and added more heats to help keep people distance. We were also happy to see our biggest youth and female divisions as more families are enjoying the competition. Among the locals competing with notable finishes were Kelton Enich, Scott Albertson, and Emma Stadahar. Is that how I say that name?
Stadahar. Yep.
She's the yoga.
Yes.
Yoga Emma.
We've written about her before.
Right. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Mm-hmm. Enich brought home the top finish for the women's age 16 to 30 division. Albertson finished second in the men's 28 to 34 division. And Stadahar finished third in the women's 31 to 39-year-old division. Spokane's John Smith was the overall winner with a time of 51 minutes, 9 seconds in a field that included past champions Billy Morse Jr. and Dan Shaw. Katie Camarada of Donnelly, Idaho, took the overall women's title with a time of 1 hour, 3 minutes, 51 seconds in her first Leadman competition. The 17th annual Leadman competition is organized by the Kellogg Rotary Club and Silver Mountain Resort. Funds raised from sponsorships and registration fees directly support local organizations. Some of the groups that are benefiting this year are Shoshone Medical Center Foundation, Kellogg Youth Football, boys, Kellogg boys basketball, Pinehurst Elementary, and the class of 2021 at Kellogg High School. Leadman has generated more than $150,000 for local charities since its inception in 2005. There were also a few injuries this year. The fire district, Shoshone County Fire District number 2, Chief Mark Ommett, who we mentioned earlier, stated that two of the injuries were minor cuts and one was moderate in severity after falling off a bike, and then another one required medical transport.
All right. Well, sounds like a great event. I'm glad to have it back. It's one of Silver Mountain's staple events. So
yeah, it really kicks off their summer.
Mm-hmm.
The weather that day, if you were out there, was just spectacular.
I think everybody's going to be excited to get all of our events coming back here. We've got Depot Day.
Still online only.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's still online only this year.
They're doing something for that.
Yeah, okay. They are doing it, but right. It's going to be online only.
Well, then Blues. And I just got an event invite days. This morning about Gyro and Huckleberry.
Yeah.
Huckleberry Fest, yeah. That brings us into what's happening. Watts Appliance has been providing incomparable customer service in the Silver Valley for over 50 years. Family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding appliances and the brands they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst. That ad rolls right off the tongue. I really like that one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yep. What do we got, Josh?
Coming out of the Kellogg Evening News, April 20th, 1967, headline, Local Masonic Lodge Has Colorful History. Wardner Lodge number 34, Ancient, Free, and Accepted Masons, which will dedicate its new Masonic Temple Saturday, has a colorful history in the local district dating back to 1898. Wardner Lodge number 34 was chartered by the Grand Lodge of Idaho in September 9th, 1896, following the application of George Balderston, William H. Faulkner, Leroy Clements, J.L. McGee, Harvey Ross, D.H. Singley, Charles M. Brown, J.W. Craig, Charles F. Neer, T.B. Stillman, and Garrett Anderson. At a special communication of the lodge held October 27th, in the 100 F. Hall in Wardner, Brother George Gilbert of Shoshone Lodge No. 25 of Wallace acted as worship master pro tem, having been appointed by the Grand Master to perform the honors installation. What an interesting...
I'm kind of curious about the place now.
We also have like that sweet old book that has like some of their information.
We do have that sweet old book, yeah.
Yeah. Moving ahead to the Kellogg Evening News, April 20th, 1978. Headline, Kellogg News Publisher Taken by Death.
Oh.
This is on the front page, and this was when William L., also known as Bill Penny, died. But it's always wild when we see these old newspapers because they don't say that, you know, this person died. Taken by death.
Death is personified. Death is a person.
Yeah. Like death is this like active enemy that they're working against. Also in the 1978 edition, headline, Valley Boxer to Fight in Spokane, Bill Johnson, a Silverton, a Wallace High graduate who now works the Lucky Friday, will be a contestant in boxing action to be seen Friday evening, April 21st at 7:30 p.m. in the Kennedy Pavilion at Gonzaga University. Johnson is the lone exception from a full line of Gonzaga or Whitworth College boxers, and his opponent is a Whitworth College man who is undefeated in appearing in Golden Gloves competition during the past 2 years. The event is sponsored by Gonzaga Intramural Boxing Club, and tickets to the 12-bout program are $1.50. All matches are in the upper class brackets.
Cool.
And we have such a rich boxing history here in this little community. You would not believe that the boxing is as popular here,
mm-hmm.
but it is. And it remains, thanks in part to a lot of the efforts of a former guest interview on the podcast, Mr. Rick Welliver.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
And that is what's happening.
That's what's happening.
Yeah.
It's raining kittens. Silver Valley Cat Wranglers are looking for forever homes for Smokey, a 1.5-year-old female cat and her 2 litters of kittens. Smokey is shy at first, but warms up and is very affectionate. She is mostly an indoor cat, but is used to being outside on a limited basis. She's used to cats, but not to dogs. If you would like to adopt or participate in the Silver Valley Cat Wranglers, please contact them at 208-446-7131. Donations are gladly accepted and can be dropped off at any Stover and Supply location in the Silver Valley. Okay, that brings us into the Bonner County Daily Beat headlines for Saturday, April 17th. Fast thinking prevents fire spread. Sounds like this is going to be a common theme in this episode, Josh.
Yeah.
Thursday saw at least 5 different fires in the area. Oh, 5 fires. We had 4 fires. Okay, you guys want to just one-up us? In the area, including one that almost reached a house near Sagal because of a slash pile at her neighborhood's home. Pamela Simone, who lives in the Sagal area, said she was in her home when she looked outside and saw a fire on her neighbor's property and an elderly woman carrying buckets of water to try and quench the flames. The woman, named Tressie, lived down the road and knew the neighbor, Simone told the Daily Bee. The woman had gone on a drive, one of her first outings in months after receiving her COVID-19 vaccination. Quote, she had tried to call the fire department, but her phone was dead, Simone said. This little 80 or 90-year-old lady was pouring buckets of water on the neighbor's propane tank. The fire started, Simone said, because of a slash pile near her neighbor had thought was out. The neighbor had watered it down and thought it was safe to leave before going to work, only for the first fire to reignite later on. Fire burned a few acres, Simone said, but because of Tressie's actions and help from the fire department, the buildings were saved. Even so, she wants people to know fire danger is high. Although many people think it's safe to burn, dried grasses and debris left over from the winter months make extremely flammable and fast-burning fuels, said Selkirk Fire Chief Dale Hopkins. Quote, it's been cool and it's been rainy, so they think there's a very low fire danger, he said. I think it's just people aren't aware that these light fuels are as flammable as they are.
Interesting.
Yeah. Sounds like a very common theme that's going around, huh?
Hey, it's a great time to sell your house because inventory is low, and Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty is a lifelong resident of North Idaho. She's a local realtor who is well-connected and knows every nook and cranny of our beautiful community. Contact Julie at 208-659-1764. She's your best friend in real estate.
Moving on to Sunday, April 18th headlines. Josh, tell me about Momo.
Momo releases new album. This is by Rachel Sun. Alyssa Nunke has loved music since before she could speak. The way her mother, Barbara Nunke, tells it, when Alyssa was 6 months old, she would sing melodies to herself before she could even speak, rocking herself back and forth and singing the blues. Alyssa, who goes by the professional name Momo, has been writing since she was a young girl and making music since she was a teenager, her father, Mike Nunke, said. When she was a child in Minneapolis, the family ran a music venue with Mike as a sound engineer and took their children to see the Grateful Dead when Alyssa was 6 years old. Quote, both of us have been very into music and that since we were kids, and I guess just by nature projected that onto our children, he said. Over the years, Barbara said, her daughter has written over 500 songs. Her first album, Quarantimes Volume 1, which explores the realities of living through the pandemic, is now available to stream and for purchase on Momo and Co. at Momoandco.bancamp.com. Quote, I've been writing for a long time and just have not done anything with it, she said. Quote, I was like, well, I might have worked for a few months and I got the time. Might as well choose now. Music has been a release for her during the pandemic, Alyssa said. Quote, I think people turning their experience through this past year into art is essential. Someday we will all look back at this time and have difficulty explaining what it was like, but through art, our experiences are immortalized. Before recording her album at Chicken Shack Studios in Kokolala, Alyssa recorded songs at her home studio. Early in the pandemic, Nunke said she worked to keep a music diary, which she later put to music in the summer of 2020. Her song, 6 Feet, was especially meaningful to her because she wrote the lyrics days before the death of George Floyd. In addition to those songs, Alyssa wrote another short album titled Other Rhymes, which is available for streaming. The songs include I'm Not a Lady, Diamonds, Knock Knock, Virus, and Broke In. Originally, the songs were to be included in Quarantimes Volume 1 album, she said, but they weren't about the same topics, she decided to split them off. Recording the album took 2 days, he said. After that, mixing did not take long. Quote, most of it was just her and her acoustic, so it really wasn't taking too long to mix and mater. We left it in really raw. I think that's the way she wanted it, he said. While the pandemic has become has had an undeniable toll on the music industry as a whole, for Alyssa, the move of artists releasing more music online only also opened a door for her. Quote, everyone's looking for new music to listen to, she said. In the next few months, Alyssa plans to move to Seattle to continue her music career.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, Lot Claim survives. This is by Keith Kinnaird. A first district court judge is ordering an evidentiary hearing in the case of a Tennessee man who allegedly was duped into entering pleas in connection with the killing of his former wife. Stephen Matthew Lott is serving a 25-year prison term after he entered Alford pleas to voluntarily manslaughter and failing to notify authorities of a death. Under the terms of the plea, Lott takes no moral responsibility for the death of Christine Mare Lott, but admits he could have been convicted if his case went to trial. Christy Lott disappeared in 2004 while living in Bonner County. Stephen Lott claimed he saw her last getting into a pickup truck outside of a Priest River grocery store. He gave sheriff's investigators varying accounts of her disappearance over the years, claiming she ran off with a drug dealer or committed suicide. Family members, however, vigorously disputed the claims and asserted the 33-year-old mother who grew up in Moyer Springs would never have abandoned her children. Stephen Lott ultimately relocated to Murfreesboro and remarried. An antler shed hunter discovered Christy Lott's remains in a remote forest in Kootenai County in 2016. A Bonner County grand jury indicted Stephen Lott on a first-degree murder charge in 2018, and he subsequently entered into mediation to resolve his case. Judge Barbara Buchanan ordered Lott to serve consecutive 15 and 10-year prison terms, the maximum punishment allowed under state law, because he engaged in a lengthy campaign to deceive family members about her whereabouts and demise. Stephen Lott filed suit in a civil case to obtain post-conviction relief, claiming Bonner County Prosecutor Lewis Marshall and Kootenai County Sheriff's Deputy Jerry Northrup colluded to violate his current wife's adverse spousal witness privilege, which would have shielded her from having to testify against him. Stephen Lott alleges his wife was coerced and manipulated into testifying during a grand jury proceeding and turning over a letter he gave her with specifically directed not to show anyone, according to court documents. Buchanan, however, dismissed the misconduct claims earlier because the allegations against authorities were not raised during the direct appeal of his criminal case as required by Idaho laws governing criminal procedure. As evidentiary hearings in the civil case is set for June 8th, Lott, 51, is serving his sentence at the Idaho State Correctional Institution near Boise.
Interesting.
Very much so.
Hey, don't start your summer on bald tires. Stop by Silver Eye Tire and check out their supply of Maxxis ATV and dirt bike tires. With a wide variety of tires, they are sure to have what you need to get the summer fun started. Silver Eye Tire is located at 407 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg, Idaho. This is the headline for today's paper, Tuesday, April 20th, up in Bonner County Daily Bee. Mm-hmm. Reclaim Idaho Plans Legal Challenge by Rachel Sun. Representatives for grassroots advocacy group Reclaim Idaho say they will file a court challenge to a new law requiring stricter guidelines for initiatives. Luke Mayville, the co-founder of Reclaim Idaho, said that the law violates state and federal constitutions by requiring signatures from 6% of the population for all 35 legislative districts instead of the previous 18. Quote, for nearly 100 years, Idahoans have used the initiative process to address crises the legislature refused to address. Most recently, the legislature wouldn't lift a finger to help tens of thousands of Idahoans get access to health care, he said. Quote, thanks to the Medicaid expansion initiative, over 100,000 Idahoans are now able to see a doctor. Mayville also pointed to concerns over property relief tax as a reason to oppose the stricter guidelines. Should the legislature fail to provide relief, an initiative would be harder than ever, he said. However, the legislation's co-sponsor, Representative Sage Dixon, a Republican from Ponderé, said he believes the new law would broaden the initiative process and protect Idahoans' voices from all over the state, including rural areas. Quote, the disenfranchisement comes when a geographic minority makes the decisions for the whole, Dixon wrote in an email. During the initial hearings for the bill, SB 1110, at least 141 people signed up to testify in opposition and 45 in favor. Still, the legislation garnered wide support from legislators, with Representatives Heather Scott, Republican from Blanchard, Priscilla Giddings, Republican from Whitebird, and Charlie Shepard, Representative from Pollock, all voting in favor of the bill. Right now, Mayville said the group is still deciding whether they will challenge the new law in federal court, state court, or both. Should that challenge fail, Reclaim Idaho would run an initiative named the Idaho Initiative Rights Act of 2022, he said. That initiative would roll back initiative requirements to what was last seen in 2012, requiring signatures from 6% of Idaho's registered voters based off the last election without regard to where those voters live. Should the law go unchallenged, it would make Idaho's initiative process one of the most restrictive in the nation, Mayville said. The ACLU of Idaho describes the state regulations prior to the bill signing as already being one of the most onerous ballot initiative processes in the country. Wow. Hmm. I struggle. I get very upset when I read these stories, because these grassroots initiatives are really the only way that people are able, like common people are able to actually put their stamp on something. Mm-hmm. And there's really, in my estimation, no good reason why you should take that away. And it really does kind of bum me out that the three referenced people in this story, the representatives who put their name on it, are all ours.
Yep.
In some form or fashion. It is, it's disappointing that they would want to restrict.
Well, and if Brad Little has any say in it, he's already vetoed something very similar to that legislation. So.
Yep. So, wow. Well, I think that's it, man.
Yeah. Bulk of an episode. Lots of fires. So, hey, if you're out there,
don't start a fire.
Don't start any fires. We don't need, I don't want this to become a sign of things to come. Because it's, despite what you may or may not think, it's not fun writing about fires.
It's great to win awards about fire from
taking pictures of them, fires, but
we don't want to. It makes for long days for us.
It does.
And then people want,
because it's all about us, Josh.
Yeah. and I would just appreciate it from our standpoint if you didn't do that.
Right.
You think I like going to the Cataldo boat launch at midnight on a Friday night? Realistically, like, I would like for anyone and everyone.
I mean, if you're going boating. Night boating
in Cataldo where there's bats.
Yeah, it might sound dangerous. Okay, that's fair.
I've gone night kayaking there and watched the bats come out of the trees and scoop bugs off the top of the lake or the river and like the mosquitoes flying just above it. Mm. And horrifying. Plus, I don't want rabies.
Man, bugs aren't smart. Bugs hanging out near rivers where they can be eaten by aerial things and things under the water.
Yeah.
It's just not.
It's tempting
fate. Welcome to my TED Talk.
Just a bunch of.
Bugs are not smart. More 11.
Insect adrenaline junkies.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.cdapress.com. Bonner County Daily.com, Bonner Surrey Herald.com, or the Shoshone Newspress.com. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and follow us and leave a nice comment and review. Those are always helpful. And if you have any comments, concerns, suggestions, or nice things to say.
If you want
to
comment, chime in on our pop culture chat.
Yeah.
We would love to hear that. And if
someone go to our Facebook posts these episodes come out, where I always usually keep an eye on those, and
we would love to interact with you guys. And yes, if you drop a reaction to one of our pop talks,
we'll give you a shout out.
We will discuss it and even respond to you maybe at the beginning of the next episode.
Yep. So absolutely. Okay. Well, because Madison will be out this Friday, you're going to be hearing these voices once again. So we'll be coming at you here in just a few more days.
Yeah. Real nice, Madison.
How dare she take time off?
I know, right?
Very selfish, Madison.
Agreed. Once again, we'd like to thank Bank CDA for sponsoring this episode. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local? You want flexible? You want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll see you on Friday.